This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, in a week in which we'll mark 75 years since the battleship USS Missouri became the site of the formal surrender of Imperial Japan that ended the deadliest conflict the world had ever seen. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from the man in charge of the 75th anniversary commemoration that will take place on the Missouri at Pearl Harbor on September 2nd. 75thww2commemoration.org is the official website. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and you'll be able to follow a live stream of the activities in Hawaii wherever you happen to be this week. After collecting every signature on the instruments of surrender 75 years ago, General Douglas MacArthur stepped up to a microphone on the battleship Missouri to share some words that remain pretty fascinating to hear in 2020. It had been 3.5 years since MacArthur and his family had escaped Corregidor, vowing to return to the Philippines where thousands of Americans had been captured by the Japanese. Here are the words General MacArthur spoke from Tokyo Bay on September 2nd, 1945, followed by the remarks of Admiral Chester Nimitz.
My fellow countrymen, today the guns are silent. A great tragedy has ended. A great victory has been won. The skies no longer rain death. The seas bear only commerce. Men everywhere walk upright in the sunlight. The entire world lies quietly at peace. The holy mission has been completed. And in reporting this to you, the people, I speak for the thousands of silent lips forever stilled among the jungles and the beaches and in the deep waters of the Pacific which mark the way. I speak for the unnamed brave millions homeward bound to take up the challenge of that future which they did so much to salvage from the brink of disaster. As I look back on the long, tortuous trail from those grim days of Bataan and Corregidor, when an entire world lived in fear, when democracy was on the defensive everywhere, when modern civilization trembled in the balance, I thank a merciful God that he has given us the faith, the courage, and the power from which to mold victory. We have known the bitterness of defeat and the exaltation of triumph. And from both, we have learned there can be no turning back. We must go forward to preserve in peace what we won in war. A new era is upon us. Even the lesson of victory itself brings it profound concern, both for our future security and the survival of civilization. The destructiveness of the war potential through progressive advances in scientific discovery, has, in fact, now reached a point which revises the traditional concept of war. Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. From the very start, workable methods were found insofar as individual citizens were concerned. But the mechanics of an instrumentality of larger international scope have never been successful. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. The problem, basically, is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescence and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advance in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh. We stand in Tokyo today, reminiscent of our countryman, Commodore Perry, 92 years ago. His purpose was to bring to Japan an era of enlightenment and progress by lifting the veil of isolation to the friendship, trade, and commerce of the world. But alas, the knowledge thereby gained of Western science was forged into an instrument of oppression and human enslavement. Freedom of expression, freedom of action, even freedom of thought were denied through suppression of liberal education, through appeal to superstition, and through the application of force. We are committed by the Potsdam Declaration of Principles to see that the Japanese people are liberated from this condition of slavery. It is my purpose to implement this commitment just as rapidly as the armed forces are demobilized and other essential steps taken to neutralize the war potential. The energy of the Japanese race, if properly directed, will enable expansion vertically rather than horizontally. If the talents of the race are turned into constructive channels, the country can lift itself from its present deplorable state into a position of dignity. To the Pacific Basin has come the vista of a new emancipated world. Today, freedom is on the offensive. Democracy is on the march. Today, in Asia as well as in Europe, unshackled peoples are tasting the full sweetness of liberty, the relief from fear. In the Philippines, America has evolved a model for this new free world of Asia. In the Philippines, America has demonstrated that peoples of the East and peoples of the West may walk side by side in mutual respect and with mutual benefit. The history of our sovereignty there has now the full confidence of the East. And so, my fellow countrymen, today I report to you that your sons and daughters have served you well and faithfully with the calm, deliberate, determined fighting spirit of the American soldier and sailor, based upon a tradition of historical trait as against the fanaticism of an enemy supported only by mythological fiction. Their spiritual strength and power has brought us through to victory. They are homeward bound. Take care of them.
That was General of the Army Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Commander of the Allied Powers. We will now hear Fleet Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, United States Navy, the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet.
On board all naval vessels at sea and in port and at our many island bases in the Pacific, there is rejoicing and thanksgiving. The long and bitter struggle which Japan started so treacherously on the 7th of December 1941 is at an end. I take great pride in the American forces which have helped to win this victory. America can be proud of them. The officers and men of the United States Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine who fought in the Pacific have written heroic new chapters in this nation's military history. I have infinite respect for their courage, resourcefulness, and devotion to duty. We also acknowledge the great contribution to this victory made by our valiant allies. United we fought, and united we prevail. The port of Tokyo, which was first opened by Commodore Perry in 1853, is now crowded with United States men of war. The process of bringing Japan into the family of civilized nations, which was interrupted when Japan launched her program of conquest, will soon begin again. Today, all freedom-loving peoples of the world rejoice in the victory and feel pride in the accomplishments of our combined forces. We also pay tribute to those who defended our freedom at the cost of their lives. On Guam is a military cemetery in a green valley not far from my headquarters. The ordered rows of white crosses stand as reminders of the heavy cost we have paid for victory. On these crosses are the names of American soldiers, sailors, and Marines: Culpepper, Tomino, Sweeney, Bromberg, Depew, Malloy, Ponziani, names that are a cross-section of democracy. They fought together as brothers in arms. They died together, and now they sleep side by side. To them, we have a solemn obligation. the obligation to ensure that their sacrifice will help to make this a better and safer world in which to live. To achieve this, it will be necessary for the United Nations to enforce rigidly the peace terms that will be imposed upon Japan. It will also be necessary to maintain our national strength at a level which will discourage future acts of aggression aimed at the destruction of our way of life. Now we turn to the great tasks of reconstruction and restoration. I am confident that we will be able to apply the same skill, resourcefulness, and keen thinking to these problems as were applied to the problems of winning the victory.
The strong alliance of Japanese and American interests evident in 2020 is testament that Admiral Chester Nimitz's optimistic words on September 2, 1945 were on target. As MacArthur and Nimitz were sharing those words, a young sailor from New York named Bob Mettauer was aboard the USS Ticonderoga. He had already survived a kamikaze attack that killed his best friend, and he would spend the next few months shuttling troops, including liberated prisoners of war, back to the United States. I bring up Bob because there's an update to the story he shared with us on Hometown Heroes almost 2 years ago. In Santa Maria, California, he's known as Bicycle Bob. When we first shared Bob's story on the radio in 2018, he had logged 95,000 miles on his bicycle, and he didn't plan on stopping until he hit 100,000. So here's your update from Bob.
Well, since then, a lot of things have happened. January 3rd, I had a terrible form. I was going out of the house to go play pinochle over in the clubhouse. I fell down, wound up in the emergency room. My left leg was twice the size of my right leg. I lost a couple of months, you know, on the bike, but then I got back on, and I built up, and I was doing 9 miles every day, and then I reached 100,000 on August 11th. And then they had a big, you probably saw it on television. Did you see it?
Yeah, I found that online. That was great. So are you done now, or are you going to keep going?
No, I'm going to keep going. I received a letter from somebody that saw it with a person who lived in Santa Ynez, and she's a runner. But anyway, she sent me this letter. The message said, "You don't stop because you get old. You get old because you stop." All right? So I figure I better not stop. Next month, I'll be 96.
I'm just glad you're back up and at it.
Yeah, well, I did, though. I slowed down. I'm only doing 5 miles a day now. But the left leg still bothers me. But, you know, it'll bother me until I go down below.
So you're going to be 96.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, how many miles you think you can hit on the bike by the time you hit 100 years old?
Well, you know, that person had told me, you know, you don't get old because you... But anyway, she said she's going to come here on my 100th birthday. So who knows, you know, who knows what the good Lord has in store.
At hometownheroesradio.com, I have a link for you to local TV news coverage of Bob reaching his milestone, as well as all the info you need to follow the 75th commemoration of the end of World War II online. We're going to hear from the man spearheading that effort in Hawaii when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.